Well, Rob, welcome to the Sunday Morning Show.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Your first time, at least in the later part of Sunday. I know that Schwani has had you as slave labor.
Yeah.
previous Sunday, doing all of his work for him.
Yeah, he has. Yeah.
Yeah, but nice.
Much appreciated. Yeah. Always fun to work with Dave Schwann, though.
Yeah.
So, and a pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah, talk to me in 40 years like I have. Always fun to work with him. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Dean. How are you?
Delightful.
Excellent to hear.
Better than Matt Eberflus.
Yeah, how about that? So sometimes you can, the leopard can get some new spots, apparently, that the Bears, in their 100-plus-year history, had never... I repeat, never fired a head coach during a season.
Yeah, that was kind of remarkable, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of all coming together. You know, we've talked about it, obviously, ad nauseum with Hamp and OB starting even last year. He completely lost the locker room. And there are reports now in The Athletic that there were players that were directing their vitriol towards him during the post-game meeting in the locker room after the game against Detroit. And there was not a lot of support for the head coach via the players online or on any social media platforms after Friday. So it seems like it was the move that had to be made. I don't know why the move wasn't made last year before the offseason or during the offseason. When you have a new quarterback, it's usually probably a good idea to find somebody that actually knows what they're doing offensively. And he didn't.
Come on. Don't kick him while he's down.
Well, I was kicking him while he was up. I mean, I feel like I can go at him now.
Kick him everybody else.
Don't kick a field goal while he's down.
You know, look, I never like to see anybody lose their job. That's not the intent of that whole thing. But he's been under the gun for a while.
I happen to see, I don't know why this has suddenly become a holiday tradition for me, but I happen to see the original Frankenstein movie.
Yes.
Now, does anything scream Happy Thanksgiving than that? And I also saw Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, which has Dracula, which it's got all the horror, you know, the classic Universal monsters in it.
Wow.
And these are great movies, by the way. These are fantastic movies. But it occurred to me when the townspeople were chasing after Frankenstein with guns and axes and clubs, that was the Matt Eberflus. That was the last few days.
Okay, yeah, it's true.
Matt Eberflus, where people were chasing him down Lakeshore Drive
with
torches. And
Yeah, it got ugly. It you know, like I said, it probably could have been headed off, you know, with a move at the end of last year, but for whatever reason, the Bears brass decided to continue, and he still has a couple of years left on his contract. They'll have to pay him out.
That's not too bad.
I hope he's packing his bags that he's fired, Joe.
Yeah, it'll be a fun show next week. Our pregame next Sunday before the game against the 49ers will be an interesting one to get
the guys' thoughts. That's the first one with the new guy, the interim guy.
Thomas Brown, who was calling the plays as well, so he'll be the guy on the sideline.
Should we get the opinion of producer Jack Heinrich, because he is the up-and-coming sports star on WGN.
And he's one of the brilliant producers of the Hamp and OB show.
He is one of the brilliant producers, but over the weekend, the holiday weekend, when I wasn't watching Frankenstein or Dracula.
Or listening to Wildcats basketball featuring myself and Billy McKinney from Arizona.
I was just about to say that. I was hearing Jack being Mr. Sports Anchor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Look at you.
Got one sportscast on Friday to say he was fired, but I mean, I think it was definitely warranted after that disaster at the end of the game.
Here you go.
Hamp and
lighting the torch.
Hamp and OB were not happy.
He's alive. Kill him.
Hamp and OB were not happy. I did not go in the studio after that game.
Yeah.
Kevin Powell was fending them off.
Kevin was really
for Andy.
That's right.
See, I strategically plan these things, you know, just to be out of the building when they're in their rampage mode. But they had every right to be very unhappy with the way that game ended. I'm sitting in a hotel room in Arizona watching that game, thankfully, because it was on national TV. And I'm just looking, what is he doing? Or what is he not doing? Call a timeout, for goodness sakes. You can't take it on the plane and use it tomorrow.
I thought hemp was going to have a blood vessel break in its head when I heard the beginning of that show.
Yeah. I tuned in for a little bit of it via the WGN radio app.
Holy smokes. It's why we love hemp and OB.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, we should have paramedics standing by.
Oh, yeah.
When that's going on, because it sounded downright dangerous for these guys.
Yeah, it's, you know, and people have always asked me about these guys and whether they're you know, making this stuff up for radio. I'm like, wait a minute. No.
No, not even close.
These guys played at such a high level.
It's the real deal.
And bled blue and orange for so long for between the two of them, both winning world championships. This is not phony baloney stuff. This is like right from the heart.
Let's try to use the phrase phony baloney.
I like phony baloney.
As much as we possibly can on the show today. Welcome to our phony baloney Sunday radio. He sings I love hearing a nice Christmas song from somebody who sounds half in the bag. Walking in a I have a very alternative view of the holiday, as you can see.
That's good.
Watching Frankenstein movies. I tell you what, those are old classic horror movies. I don't know why I got hooked on those this weekend.
That's interesting.
It's so weird. But Boris Karloff is a master. Bela Lugosi as Dracula? Lon Chaney, Wolfman? You kidding me? It doesn't get better than that. Happy Thanksgiving. Weird. Weird, weird, weird. So... where's Schwani? He told me, but
he's out east
as
somewhere,
usual.
Yeah.
I wasn't paying attention to what he was saying.
He's trying to get free stuff in Virginia.
That's what it is. Yeah. That's what it is. He's taking the day off today, and nice to have Rob LaFrenz filling in doing the news today. You know who we have later in the show? We're going to have a little drive-by visit from Dr. Kevin Most.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. A little holiday visit from our old pal.
Very cool.
And we've got, it's going to be kind of an old pal Sunday morning. We've got our old pals from the American Blues Theater are going to stop by. They're the ones that do the It's Wonderful Life production, like an old-time radio show. And they're in, I think, their 23rd or 24th year now, something like that, doing that show. And they always come by here. And we're going to recreate some of the scenes this morning. Talk a little about that show and some of the other shows going on. We should acknowledge in some way air travel this morning, right? Because it's the busiest air travel day of the year, as I understand it. And apparently you can't even get near the airport right now.
Wow.
They are telling people to get off the highway and get on the L to get into the airport. I would turn right around and go right back to my hotel.
Time to go home.
If I heard that.
Yep.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, if you can, why wouldn't you just stay an extra couple of days? Right?
It's true. If you can do it.
If you can
do it. Got the time, right?
Yeah. I don't know. What's a good tip? What's some good traveling? You were just on an airplane.
So yeah.
So was I.
Yeah. You know, arrive early if you can.
Yeah.
Check your local listings for airtimes in your area.
Here's my helpful tip. If you recline your seat into me, I'm going to pour a hot beverage on you. Super hot beverage. I know the TSA may not like it. The air marshals may not like it.
No.
Don't recline. Are you a recliner or a non-recliner?
I tend not to, just because I've had people do that to me. And you know, the thing that I hate about it, I mean, if you're going to recline your seat, okay, whatever. I guess you have the right. You paid the money for the ticket. That's fine. But I have my computer or my iPad up on the tray table. And if you come flying back, you're not giving me a chance to move my, you know, my iPad or my tablet or my computer to get out of the way.
Yeah.
So at least kind of look back and say, hey, listen, I'm going to recline my seat. Okay, fine. At least I can. I have time to move my stuff.
Unless you're going to Australia or someplace, There's no need to recline your seat.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Even if you're going to L.A.
I never do it. It doesn't even seem like it's that much more comfortable
to
me. You know?
It's like 2 inches or something. Yeah. It doesn't really offer you that much more comfort. But I think it's more important to be courteous to the other people around you. I just never, ever, ever, ever recline my seat. And I have now adapted the policy. If you recline into me, I'm going to pour a hot beverage on you.
Hey, you've been warned, folks. You have been warned.
Don't sit near me.
I read where a guy was talking about how he would, if somebody reclined on him, he would order a cup of coffee and he would rest it on the seat above him, or on the seat in front of him, above the person's head.
Ooh.
Kind of a threat.
Yeah, that's very... And you could say that was an accident. I just put the cup there for a second.
I had no room. I had to put it up there.
Yeah. You know what I also will do if somebody reclines into me? I have no problem whatsoever jiggling the seat that's in front of me.
Yeah.
Like if I get up to go to the restroom, and normally I try not to, I try to be a very courteous passenger. And I try not to jiggle the seat of the person in front of me. I try not to disturb anybody else. But if you recline into me,
all bets are off.
I'm going to let you know that I'm back there.
Yeah, you can also put some things like your phone or some of that in the pouch, the whatever you call those things.
The dirty pouch?
Yeah, the dirty pouch there. And you can,
the filthy pouch.
You can maneuver those things around a little bit where it conveniently pokes someone in the back or, the small of the back or a little higher. Yeah, that lets them know you're there.
Somebody on the text line, 630 area code, said they were enjoying a lovely orange juice, and somebody reclined, and the orange juice slid off of the tray into their lap. Yeah, see, that's what just, really?
Yeah.
Do you need to recline the chair, really?
I just don't, I don't understand it.
I don't know why they recline.
I agree. They just should make them non-reclinable. I agree. And here's the other thing that really bugs me on a plane. Andy, you tell me because you just got off a plane.
Okay.
Did you have anybody with their shoes off?
Thankfully, no.
When I was coming back from Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago, a guy across the aisle from me not only had his shoes off, he needed to also take his socks off.
Mm. Mm.
And then he puts his feet up in the dirty pouch. Like, that's why I don't like to put anything in the dirty pouch. I'm afraid there might be toenails or something.
Ugh.
Worse than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But shoes and socks, I can see if it's like maybe a super long flight. You want to kick your shoes off or something.
Bring some slippers or something.
Bring some slippers and keep your paws underneath the seat in front of you.
Yep.
They don't need to be, you got to put your feet up like you're in a reclined position on the chair. Come on. People can be so rude. Oh, I would have been so mad if that orange juice had slipped into my lap. Mm. I would not have been a happy customer. Oh, well, there's our obligatory travel talk. For those of you stuck on the expressway, you can't even get near the airport today.
The other thing about the airport itself is, competent human beings are turned into mush for some reason in an airport. People just don't know what they're doing half the time.
What do you mean?
I'm just, they're walking into people. Going through security. I mean, it's a process. Just follow it, and it's all going to be okay.
I would have bet money the other day when I was coming out of the airport that I had accidentally put my invisible clothing on. That people couldn't even see me because they were like smashing their suitcases into me, the carts, just like walking directly into me. It's like I must have some kind of invisibility that I don't know that I have, that people are just so completely clueless. So get it straight. Come on. It's a busy day. Everybody wants to get home.
I did hear one tip for going through the TSA line.
Oh.
If you have a choice, I know a lot of times they direct you into the line to go into, but if you have a choice, don't always go for the shortest one.
Hmm. Why is that?
That usually it's short for a reason, and that other people have not gone in it because there's some sort of holdup or somebody's being checked extensively. So keep your eye out on what's actually happening in those lines.
I think I go with the Andy Mazur method of just be patient.
Yeah.
Whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
Yeah, and especially if you're there early, you have to worry.
Yeah, there early enough to worry about it. It doesn't make any difference. Just stay calm and... You'll get through.
Keep calm. You'll get through.
Yep.
They should put a shirt together like that or something.
Somebody should.
I've heard that before.
Somebody should try to capitalize on that. 847 area code says, Dean, some people need to recline because of back problems. They cannot sit up like you are suggesting. But you can't even recline the chairs that much.
Yeah, they've prevented that.
It's just a couple of inches. It's not like a full recline.
Yeah. I get it. I mean, there are people that you know. I've had surgery on my left knee twice, and after a while, you have to move around. I mean, it's one of those things that's going to plague me for a while. And I get up and I just stretch, and then I sit back down.
Yeah. I like to stretch. I like to go. You know, when there's not if the aisles are crowded or they're serving food or something, but when there's time, I like to get up and also stretch a little bit. The 630 area code, Andy, I have to assume this is directed to you. You're kind of whiny today.
Oh, okay. Cool. I'll work on that. I can get worse if you want. I mean,
I'm pretty sure they mean me.
Oh, darn.
And honestly, I don't think I'm much more whiny than I normally am. So, Rob, are you familiar with the feature that Dave Schwann normally does called the far-flung forecast?
I'm sorry. I'm not. No. Is that what my forecast sounded like?
That hurts. That hurts.
Yeah. It's Peabody Award winning, right?
That hurts for Schwanny right there. He puts his heart and soul into this feature every week, and then I ask people, and people don't even hear it.
Well, you know, when it comes to learning from him, I'm a sponge when it comes to learning from him, but there's so much to learn from him that I can only take in so much.
Yeah. Again, let me tell you, set the bar a little higher.
I'll work on it.
But each week, he presents to us a feature that is chock-filled with fantastic, fabulous information, the far-flung forecast. It centers on... small town location, usually somewhere in the world. And our guest far flung forecaster this week is one Mr. Andy Mazur.
Thank you, Dean. And thank you, everybody. I won't talk about compasses or protractors or newfangled devices.
Oh, come on.
Okay. Grab your compasses, your protractors, and your newfangled devices, everybody.
Oh, that's better.
Because we're headed to Pittsfield, Massachusetts today.
Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
The reason we picked Pittsfield today, of course, we're going to combine sports and entertainment, which I like to both that I like, of course. Right. It is the birthplace of Brian Piccolo, the former Chicago Bears running back who played his college football at Wake Forest in Winston-Salem, led the nation in rushing in 1964, eventually tried out for the Bears as a free agent, and in 1965 was on the taxi squad, meaning he could practice but couldn't suit up. In 1966, he made the big-time roster, the main roster, who is playing on special teams. But in 1967, he began backing up superstar tailback Gale Sayers, which increased a little bit after Sayers suffered that terrible knee injury back in November of 1968. That was, of course, Brian Piccolo's.
See, this isn't that, you know, Schwanny makes this look easy.
He does. 1968 was his best year, of course. In 69.
Are you about to make me cry with the Brian song reference?
Don't steal my thunder.
Oh, sorry.
In 69, he was moved up to starting fullback, Sayers returning as the halfback, and the two played in the same offense. Now, eventually, they ended up rooming together, and that caused a change in policy of a white player rooming with a black player on the road.
Right.
So in Atlanta, they're playing a game, and in the fourth quarter, Brian Piccolo scores a touchdown on a 1-yard run and then removed himself from the game, something that he had never, ever done before. So when the team returned to Chicago, they sent him to get some medical examinations, at which time it was found out that he was diagnosed with cancer.
I have to go get some Kleenex.
Yeah, and of course, he passed away the following year. So we do bring this up because the movie Brian's Song, the Brian Piccolo story, debuted on ABC on November 30th, so yesterday, in 1971. Mm. Starred, of course, Billy Dee Williams and James Caan.
The movie debuted?
Yeah, on ABC.
November, as a TV movie?
As a TV movie.
I never knew that.
Yeah, and it, of course, chronicles the developing friendship between the two men and, of course, being from very different backgrounds, ending with Piccolo's death in 1971. There was a speech made by Gale Sayers after he received the George S. Hallis Courage Award. And he dedicated it to Brian Piccolo, saying, quote, "I love Brian Piccolo, and I'd like all of you to love him, too." The movie was a big success on ABC, and it then was later shown in theaters.
That's what I remember.
And it had a major premiere here in the city of Chicago, of course, because Bears fans knew the story and wanted to see it on the big screen. And it was such a gut-wrenching and heart-wrenching story, but it was so cool to watch the way that the friendship developed between the two players, not only on the field, but off the field as well. So it was 53 years ago yesterday that Brian's Song debuted on ABC.
53
years ago. Right now in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, it is sunny and 23. They're expecting a high of 28 degrees.
I'm like one of these head coaches that quits and trying to hold my tears in right now.
Yeah, that's one of those movies that
gets me every time.
The strongest people around that never cry are bawling at that movie.
Seen the movie a million times, cry like a baby every single time.
Yep.
It's a good one, Andy.
Thank you.
Very nice. Once again, I think we could easily replace Schwanee on the show and no one would even miss him. It's 9:42. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. And time for the Week in Health. For that, we go to our pal, Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. I hope you had a wonderful holiday, Doctor. Was that the case? Or were you working? Doctors are 24/7.
I did work Thanksgiving, but I had the rest of the weekend off, which was tremendous. I hope yours was a good one.
It was. It was indeed. Do emergency rooms tend to be busier or quieter on holidays?
Well, I think the in the old days you could get out in the ambulance bay and throw a football around. It was so quiet. But the nature of healthcare today is it truly is a 24/7 business. That being said, Thanksgiving was fairly light for the most part, at least during the day. So it's always nice to give everybody a little bit of a breather and then dive back into it.
Yeah. Do you have people coming into the emergency room because they've eaten too much, and they're suffering some kind of gastric issue?
Yes. Yes, we do. And it's not just Thanksgiving. Any kind of major holiday, there's typically a run of folks that, like you say, overdid it, and their tummies are hurting. And we're happy to take care of those issues. They're usually fairly easy to diagnose and treat, and people are pretty satisfied when they feel better.
What do you do when someone has overeaten? Do you give them a bicarbonate, or what do you do?
Well, I think the first thing is to make sure that is indeed the case,
right?
Because it can certainly mimic or mask something more serious underlying. And so we try to make sure there's nothing life-threatening or organ-threatening at play. And then it's, the remedies that you might think of, a little bit of Gas-X, maybe a little antacid, sometimes even some pain medicine, or if there's nausea or diarrhea, then we can certainly treat those issues as well. So it just kind of depends on, where the person's at. We try to meet people where they're at, and there's plenty of both over-the-counter remedies that we can provide and also remedies that aren't available over-the-counter.
Yeah, talk about you know, symptoms seeming to be one thing when really there's something else. And that's, you know, where our emergency room people are so great in figuring all that stuff out. I had a friend, this was, it was either Christmas Eve or Thanksgiving. It was a holiday. And a friend of mine had a nice dinner. And then she calls, you know, the dinner is over. She calls me like an hour later that she's having chest pains. And can I come and help her and take her to the hospital? And that she was convinced she was having a heart attack. Took her to the, rushed her to the hospital, to Northwestern, actually, downtown. And it was some esophageal thing. I don't remember exactly what it was called, but it was basically, I guess, the motion of the esophagus of pushing the food down your gullet, you know, has a sort of a rhythm to it when it gets thrown off a little bit. It mimics the pain of a heart attack when really, it's just, it's not exactly food being stuck in your esophagus, but it's as simple as that and not as scary as a heart attack. I mean, you must see these kinds of things once in a while, right?
Well, that's more than once in a while. It's extremely common both ways, meaning that people come in with chest pain and they think they're dying, and it is the esophagus, which passes right next to the heart on its way down to the stomach. Or alternatively, people come in with a little bit of nausea, and in fact, it is a heart attack.
Mm.
So it can be very confusing, and as you allude to, there are a number of structures in the and around the chest, and the wiring is very kind of haphazard, if you want to think about it like electrical wiring, like in a house. You know, the heart electrical wires that go to the brain that tell you to sense pain pass right over the esophagus, and so the brain can be confused. It can't pinpoint with a great deal of accuracy where that discomfort might be coming from. So that's where we come in, and of course, our friends in the x-ray department and the lab department, don't want to forget about all the wonderful people that help us in the hospital figure out what exactly is going on. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes work, stagecraft, if you will, that allows us to do our job so well.
Yeah, and thank goodness that you're all there for that. I've heard one news story after another this week of salmonella-tainted something or other. There's been two or three different kinds of foods that have been apparently tainted with salmonella and recalled. How do you know if you have been affected by this? I mean, you know, keep an eye out for the news story so you're not ingesting any of this. But how does one know if they get salmonella?
Yeah, it's definitely it's really disturbing to see these reports, and I'm sorry that we're having to go through this. I think most recently a recall of cucumbers, if I read correctly. It's generally in the GI tract, meaning your symptoms can range from diarrhea to just abdominal cramps to fever. But typically the symptoms would be longer than a day. And that's generally what I tell people. You know, these kind of viral outbreaks like norovirus or some of the other GI viruses tend to be in and out the door very quickly, similar to food poisoning. And when I just want to be clear that when we talk about food poisoning, we're not talking about things like salmonella. We're talking about less severe viral or bacterial illnesses. But if you're going longer than 24 hours, and particularly if you're having a fever, if the vomiting won't stop, if the pain is severe, that's a sign that it might be something like salmonella.
Yeah, I think there was the cucumbers to which you refer. There were eggs that were recalled. There were two or three different things. So, you know, everybody be careful out there. And now I would guess this weekend is prime Thanksgiving dinner leftover season. You know, people are probably, oh, let me finish up those leftovers that are in the fridge. How safe is that to eat two or three days after the case?
Yeah, we have a 2-day rule in our house, but we're also fairly restrictive. You know, I think 2 to 3 days is okay. When you get past that mark, even though items may be refrigerated, bacteria can still grow. And so I definitely recommend, you know, being cautious with that. And some, not all foods are created equal. And so, you know, the best thing you can do is if you're uncertain, look it up, and there's plenty of resources online that can guide you in the right direction. But certainly for meats, or gravies, a couple of days, and then it's time to move on.
Yeah, what I do with my leftovers, I mean, like on Thursday, on Thanksgiving Day, I would, before I put them in the fridge, I would have made them as airtight as possible. It's actually the oxygen, right, that speeds along any potential danger. So I wrap it in as much, you know, plastic wrap, squeeze all the air out, and put them then in a sealed container after that, and then try to get to them no more than two or three days after the fact. That's probably safe, right?
Well, there's nothing wrong with sealing, although, you know, there's still oxygen in there as you described, and that's enough for the bacteria. So unless you're vacuum sealing it, truly vacuum sealing, it probably doesn't offer a ton of protection. And that being said, I'll just tack on to that there's also bacteria, anaerobic bacteria, meaning not needing oxygen, that are in there. So,
oh, really?
You're darned if you do and darned if you don't.
I thought it had to have some oxygen in order to grow.
Yeah, for the aerobic bacteria, sure, but there are also those germs that can do without.
Mm, okay. All right. Well, today's probably the cutoff day if you're still looking at leftovers from Thursday. We'll continue with Dr. Jeremy Silver in just a moment. I want to get to as many of your calls and texts for the doctor as possible. If you've got questions or comments, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. 955, Dr. Jeremy Silver, Director of Emergency Medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital, answering your calls and your texts. 312-981-7200. Ronnie, you're on WGN with Dr. Silver. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Dr. Silver, for taking my call. I think I overindulged this Thanksgiving, you know, lots of stuffing, cranberry, and the whole works. Anyway, I came home, no problems. Friday, no problems, but Saturday, I'm having a bout with constipation, but what most concerned me also is the fact that my urine is a bright yellow. And I'm saying, I don't remember eating anything that was yellow that would cause that. So do you have any ideas or suggestions?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry that you're having some problems, and it's lovely to hear from you regardless. You know, there's so many different things in the diet that can lead the urine to turn yellow. I don't know that a bright yellow color would be super worrisome to me. We start to really get concerned when the urine turns a tea color or a brownish color, and certainly red, which would indicate blood. But, you know, I think if the issue continues, it would be reasonable to give your doctor a call and just have a chat, maybe have him take a look. The other piece of advice I would give, without getting into details on the radio, is if you're having any symptoms that could be associated with a urinary tract infection, and that could be painful urination or increased frequency of urination or a different odor to the urine, for instance, those would be indicators that it might be a good idea to get looked at.
Appreciate your call, Ronnie, and good luck with that. I always get a little scared the day after I eat beets. I love fresh beets, and sometimes that will will give you a surprise the next day. So, you know, these are the issues that we talk about on our medical segment. Dr. Jeremy Silver is the medical director of emergency medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Dr. Silver, I hope you have a great day today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All the action at the airports today. Yes, a fair amount of people, Rob, right? Take trains also and just get in their cars. to head wherever for the Thanksgiving holiday. But you would guess by the amount of traffic that you've been reporting out at O'Hare that most of it is on big old jet airliners.
Yeah, it would seem that way. Definitely around the around O'Hare, it's packed on the highways, on the Kennedy, on the tollway. Yeah, I guess everybody coming back all at one time. You know, everybody leaves in increments. It leaves in increments, but they all come back at the same time.
I think they're all. They started pretty early this morning.
Yeah, and also, you know, we heard that there was a real uptick in train travel this year as well. So I'm assuming over there at Ogilvy and Union Station, it's going to be pretty busy as well.
Yeah, it's lovely. Have you taken a long train trip ever?
I have not, but my girlfriend loves them. She traveled from L.A. to Chicago, wow. And back, and she absolutely loves train travel.
Yeah, we used to do it all the time when we were kids. We'd get on trains and go to visit relatives, and it's really fun.
We do it just around here, just hopping on a getting a pass on the Metro on a Sunday afternoon, just going around on the trains is a lot
really?
Of fun.
Really, look at you. Yeah. That is fun. That is fun. All right, so you know, be aware of that. There will be delays there. I guess. Can you take food? Are people taking food home from Thanksgiving? Taking leftovers? Are you allowed to take it through TSA?
I've heard you can take some food, but don't bring the gravy.
Who would bring the gravy up? That would be Schwanee.
They have a liquid
that
you know, restriction.
That would be Schwanee. Oh, yeah. Hey, I got to tell you, I really enjoyed this gravy at such and such a restaurant where I got free food.
Because I mentioned their name.
And I'm going to bring some home. I'm going to bring some gravy home. Brings gravy home. How embarrassing would that be if you're going through TSA, you get stopped, and they're going through your bag, and you've got two turkey legs and some gravy in your suitcase?
Well, I think you could bring like 2 ounces of gravy, right? You can't. There's only a certain amount of.
Oh yeah,
liquid
but it's
you
under 2 ounces, right?
Yeah. So
that's hardly worth it.
A little dipping, a little for dipping.
I would just chug that right in line, right in the TSA line. Anyway. Anyone ever go chop their own Christmas tree down?
No.
Definitely the fake tree family.
You're a fake tree family. Well, the folks at Tree Time love you.
Yeah. We're a fake tree family, too. We just got ours out of storage yesterday.
Yeah. I have a fake tree, but one from Tree Time, and it's beautiful. But I was just looking at the real trees this year. Every once in a while, I just get a bug to, I should go get a real tree. And back in when my nieces and nephews were younger, I'd pile them all in the car. We would drive to Paw Paw, Michigan.
Ah.
I don't know why we went to Paw Paw, because there are other places that I know are closer. But we go to Paw Paw, and the kids would run around like banshees out in the snow, in the cold. And we'd pick out a tree and saw it down, tie it onto the car, bring it back. It was super fun, really fun with the kids, and they have nice memories of it now, which I'm happy to see. But where do people even go now to cut their own trees down? 312-981-7200.
Pawpaw.
Well, you know what? There were a lot of. I imagine that there are still tree farms in that area. But I know that there were some places here in Illinois where people would go to cut trees down. They're 1,000 times fresher, and the needles stay on the trees longer. There's a million reasons that if you're going to have a non-artificial tree to go cut your own tree down. Because the ones that are in the parking lots that are there waiting for you right now in those tree lots, those were cut down like a month ago,
yep.
And then often sprayed green. So I highly recommend, cutting your own tree down.
So if you procrastinate when it comes to taking your tree down, you want to have a real one so that one that you chop down so that it stays fresher longer.
Yeah, and the needles don't go all over the place. Nothing worth it. You're walking around your house in June and a Christmas tree needle gets you in the toe. I used to enjoy that. And when I had a dog, my dog Lucy would eat the tinsel on the tree.
Oh no!
That was always.
I know where this is going.
Yeah, that was a fun Christmas tradition. The removal of the tinsel from Lucy's digestive system.
Do the kids have good memories of that as well?
Yeah, I don't know if the kids ever actually saw that. That was a private memory, I think, for me, that clearly I've never forgotten. 312-981-7200. Where can I go cut my own down if I wanted to do that? Tell me about some places, please. 312-981-7200. Classic. It's a classic. The great Brenda Lee. At 1019, Dean Richards, Sunday morning. Where do you go to cut your own Christmas tree down? In years, really, it's been decades, I think, since I've done it. And I'm thinking I may want to get my bow saw out and go out there and give it a try. How about you? 312-981-7200. Jim, you've gone to cut your own tree down?
No, my sister and them do it annually every year. She lives in Portland, Oregon. They go to a tree farm. And the last one that they cut down, picked it up, brought it home, set it up, hung the lights on it, was starting to put the ornaments. And as the tree thawed out and started to spread out, they noticed a kind of unusual smell. By the next day, the house was reeking of this nasty smell. And they figured out that some animal, coyote or some wild animal, had marked the tree with their territory.
Oh.
That cured her. She only gets a artificial tree
out. She switched to artificial trees.
Right. Stink tree.
It's a good story to share every year, though, right?
Oh, yeah, it is. I can't imagine.
Yeah, I can't either. I thought you were headed for... there was a live animal in the tree or, you know, something like that that they didn't notice when they cut the tree down.
Wasn't that Chevy Chase's A Christmas Thing where the squirrel jumped out of the tree?
I think so. I think that's what it was. Wow. Okay. Well, there's a scent other than a lovely pine scent that you hope for when you have a real tree in the house. That's a great
story. There you go.
It's a great story, Jeff. Thanks very much for sharing it. Let's go over to Bob. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, Dean. How you doing?
Very well.
Well, my family's been going out to DeKalb, Illinois for at least, I don't know, 10 years or more to a place called Camelot Farms.
Oh, I've heard of Camelot, yeah.
And they have like three different lots that you can choose trees from, and they're all different types of trees, Douglas firs, blue spruce, just all different types. And we let our kids each year choose a tree, so it rotates around. I have three kids, and so it rotates around as to which kid gets the tree.
Yeah.
And then cut it down and bring it home, and it's amazing. Every time we bring one of their trees home, for some reason, our house smells like tangerines right away for about 5 days.
Really?
And yeah, it's really interesting. And then it smells like, you have a nice pine tree in your house, and it smells like pine all the time, like a candle fern.
It smells like oranges first, though. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I wonder why that is. Where's our science advisor when we need him to explain that? I used to do that. As I said, I used to take my nieces and nephews out with me, and we'd pile in the car, and I did the same thing. Each one, you know, they got to take turns picking the trees out. And one of my nephews one year chose this gigantic tree that we would never be able to fit on the car, much less in the house. And he said, well, Uncle Dean, if we just cut down the top 6 feet of it, look how perfect it is. And I looked at it. I said, well, yeah, the top 6 feet do look nice. You know, this is from a distance. So we chop this big old tree down and then chop off the top 6 feet. Well, you know, it looks quite different up close than it does from a distance. And those top 6 feet had like maybe three branches on it. It was pathetic. It was talk about a Charlie Brown Christmas tree.
Right.
But great stories, though. Give me the name of this place again where you go.
It's Camelot Farms. It's out toward, going toward DeKalb.
Okay. Camelot Farms near DeKalb. Very good. I hope you have a great holiday, Bob. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you, too, Dan.
Bye. Appreciate it. 312-981-7200. Yeah, we've got a lot of suggestions here on our text line. Let's see, 630 area code. Growing up, we always went to Pineapple Orchard in Maple Park. Great memories. Maple Park's not that far, just in the west suburbs. 224 area code. Michael from Park City here. I took my last year's tree out to the curb for garage. What is this? For garbage day. Needleless to say. Okay, that's a needle joke. Okay, I get it. Thank you for that. Here's another one, 708 area code, Pine Crest near Three Oaks, Michigan. I've heard of that one. I've never been. 630 area code. Oh, here's one that's been open for years. I've never gone. Maybe I'll go this year. Abbey Farms in Aurora is a great place to cut down your own tree. They also have a farm store with holiday cheer. Abbey Farms near Aurora. Dean, there are a bunch of tree farms in the Madison, Wisconsin area, a little closer than Paw Paw. Very true. Marion Abbey Tree Farm in Aurora. I think that's the same place that we were talking about before, the Marion Arby, Abbey. Rather. My brother goes to Sandwich, Illinois, to Larson's and cuts his tree down, has fun with the whole family. Yeah, that was the thing that I remember. You know, as the uncle, how much fun it was that the kids had so much fun running around and picking trees and, you know, having cider and hot chocolate. It's just, it's a great day, really, of family fun. Bob, how about for you? Where do you go?
Well, Dean, there's a place in Hartford, Michigan, which is maybe 2 hours or less from at least the south part of Chicago. It's called Tall Timbers Tree Farm. Near Waterville, near St. Joe,
okay.
Michigan. Great place. They have assorted trees, Fraser firs, Scotch pines, Christmas trees that I don't even know what they're called.
Yeah.
They have hay rides. They take you out. And we used to, I think the first time we went, and we had a saw with us, and that was not a memorable, fun time. So we have them cut it down. They come with their little
chainsaw.
Cut it down for you, and it's much, much more efficient.
Yeah,
it's a good time.
It is efficient, but I'll tell you what, the memories of my two little nephews on the bow saw. back in, stop, you're supposed to pull. No, you're supposed to push. You're supposed to.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then you have to also chop off the lower limb so you can put it in the stand.
Right.
And this place actually sells stands that are very unique, so you don't have to mess with the stand when you get home. It has a spike
nice.
That goes right in the bottom of the tree. It's wonderful.
Oh, that's got to be nice, and especially to put some water in there if there is an easier way for that tree to drink up the water. Do you only put water in, or do you? Some people put 7-Up. Some people put aspirin. Some people do a whole variety of different things.
I've heard that too, but we're just pretty much water.
Yeah,
and it does really drink it up after when you first bring it in the house.
Yeah, but once it seals up, forget about it.
Correct.
You pretty much have to do a new cut, which after you've decorated the tree, that's pretty impossible. Very nice.
Yep.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call, Bob. Thank you so much. Here is the 708 area code. My neighbor had a really nice one in their yard, and under cover of the darkness, I went and sawed it down the other night. No, you did not do that. But I love the story, though. 630 area code. Instead of wrestling with a real tree, I buy a real wreath and hang it above the fireplace so it can enjoy the fragrance without all of the mess of the needles falling down. You know what? If you have a fresh cut tree, the needles hang on pretty good. It's these trees that you buy from the lots that have been cut down a month ago and they're already half dried out. By the time you get that thing home, those are the ones where the needles fell off. But these fresh cut ones, I got to say, they do last quite a long time. So anyway, there's a few suggestions. Somebody also texted me that Chicago Patch. Let me see if I can find these. Yeah, if you Google Chicago Patch, they have an article on where to cut your own Christmas trees down in Illinois for this year. Chicago Patch, probably ChicagoPatch.com, I would guess. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, there you go. Coming up, we're going to meet the cast of the American Blues Theater's production of It's a Wonderful Life. That is just opened the other day. They do their production like an old-time radio show, like a 1940s radio show. And they'll be in studio with us. They're going to do some scenes. We always have tons of laughs with them whenever they come to visit, which pretty much is an annual event. They're now in, I think, their 23rd year of putting this production on. It's a really, really entertaining one. So they're going to be joining us on our theater segment after 10:30 this morning. And then we will be joined by our old pal, Dr. Kevin Most. He's going to pay us a special holiday visit. And we'll chat with our old buddy coming up after 11 o'clock. At 11:30, the stars of the number one movie in America, Moana 2. It's breaking all kinds of records at the box office. People are going like crazy to take their kids to go and see this one. Dwayne The Rock Johnson and the two young ladies who do the music for the movie, one of which is from Rockford, and also the star, the young lady who plays Moana, plays the voice of Moana, all coming up later this morning. And it is time for the Week in Theater. Almost all the theaters around the Chicago area have their holiday productions up and running. Whether it's Frozen, the musical out at the Paramount, or The Little Mermaid at the Drury Lane. The Goodman has a little show that they do call A Christmas Carol. But I got to tell you, my favorite, It's a Wonderful Life, that has been running for over 20 years with the American Blues Theater. It's a Wonderful Life live in Chicago, which is the story that you know from the Jimmy Stewart, Donna Reed movie, done as an old-time radio show. It's so fun to go and see this show, and every year they come in to visit with us, to goof around with us, to laugh with us. And here they are giggling all the way already. Nice to have you all here with us. Brandon Dahlquist plays George Bailey. Audrey Stone Billings is Mary Bailey. Our pal Michael Mahler is one of the actors. He's the announcer. He's the musical director. Ian Custer plays Harry in the show. And J.G. Smith is the Foley or sound effects person for the show. Welcome, everybody. Nice to have you here with
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having us. We're thrilled to be here.
Well, I was trying to figure out how many years that you guys have been coming in. What year is this, Michael, for the
for the
production?
I have a six-year-old. I have no idea what year it is.
You barely remember 10 minutes ago, don't
right,
you?
Right. Yeah, no, this is, yeah, it's over. We've been doing this show for over 20 years. I've been involved for, I think, 13 now. It's amazing. It's mm-hmm. such a cool thing to be a part of a tradition like this.
Yeah, it's the second longest-running holiday show in Chicago. I know that. Brandon, for how many years now have you been doing this? You've been...
Yeah, this is year eight for me.
Year eight.
I started in 2016, was my first season.
Yeah.
He's our longest running George Bailey of all
time.
That's
right. That's still running.
Yeah. Look at you. Look at you. Well, Audrey, you're a veteran with
this is my fifth year.
Yeah.
It's really, I mean, it's kind of wild because my first year was on Zoom in the middle of COVID.
How crazy is that?
Yeah. Right? It feels kind of crazy that was the jump off for my stint as Mary Bailey, but it's really nice to be doing it live.
We were just talking before we went on the air about, you know, doing the show on Zoom and doing this show with all of our guests on Zoom back in the day. But how weird, right, to do a live theatrical production, and nobody's in the theater.
Yeah, it was really, you know, at first I think we were all afraid it'd feel really disconnected, but it actually was lovely because we had people tuning in from all over the country and the world. Yeah. So we had somebody in London at like 2 a.m. tuning in to watch this Zoom production of It's a Wonderful Life. So I don't know. I think it's special whether it's live or virtual.
Yeah. And it is fun to be back in the room with people because we always ask the audience, how far have they traveled to come see us? And invariably there's people that have traveled from all over the place. Like last night we had people from the Philippines
and South Africa.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So it's pretty wild.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's something about this show also, right? That's so universal.
Absolutely.
And, you know, people know It's a Wonderful Life from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And to see it performed in such a unique way, you know, that's got to be kind of special as well. Ian, how many years for you now?
I've been doing it 11 years.
You are the veteran here.
Me and Michael, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, 11 years. It's been a long time.
Yeah,
so.
That's amazing.
Fighting for the title.
Here we are. We're battling it out, Mike.
And in lots of different theaters, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah,
now American Blues Theater has its has a brand new home.
We have our own space now, which is really amazing. You know, talking about just, you know, doing it on Zoom, but we've done it at so many other theaters in Chicago, whether it was Victory Gardens or the Chopin or the Greenhouse Theater in Lincoln Park. And so it's really, really special to finally be doing it at our own house in our own place, up in Budlong Woods.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a really neat place to be.
It's right on Lincoln Avenue.
And Bryn Mawr.
Right near Bryn Mawr.
Yeah. Yeah, right across from the Budlong Public Library.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How fun is it, Michael, for you? To be in, you know, a permanent home, a brand new home.
It's a dream come true.
Beautiful building. It's a beautiful, beautiful theater.
I feel like I still pinch myself every time I come to work. You know, we've been, like we said, we've been itinerant for so long. And to have a space of our own that we can come back to year after year. And we're expanding. You know, we've got our main space where we're doing It's a Wonderful Life. We've got a nice little black box theater where we're doing shows, too. It's a really exciting time for American Blues Theater. And we're just thrilled that people are coming out to see our stuff.
And the response from the neighborhood has been great. Everyone that lives up there is just very, very excited that we're there. And
so welcoming. Yep. And it's been really neat.
Yeah, that's very nice. JG, you are the Foley person.
Yeah.
Right.
Hi.
For the show. Explain what a Foley person is. All these years I've been trying to figure out why it's called Foley.
It is named after the originator of the technique, Jack Foley.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Look at that. All you got to do is ask.
She's a font of knowledge. Yes.
I guess I never really directly asked the question before.
there's a first time for everything. and I'm thrilled to give you with that knowledge for the holiday season.
Yes, thank you. That may be the nicest present I get all year.
Oh, wow. That's the nicest thing anybody said to me all year.
Now, I can't see what you have spread out in front of you there, but you have all kinds of things.
I do.
To do sound effects for the show, right?
I do have a few tools of the trade. There are some that are especially beautiful and especially fragile, so I've left them back at the theater where they're safe.
Right.
So come see the show and you'll get to hear even more. The extended cut, the DLC, if you will. but what I have today is a couple of ones that you'll probably hear in some of the scenes that we'll read for you.
For example?
For example, if you want to hear maybe George running through some snow, it sounds a little bit like... And maybe he's picking up some speed. Yeah. And maybe he's getting into his house and slamming the door.
Okay.
Or maybe he's getting into a car right now and it sounds something like this.
Oh, that sounds...
And a few more that, again, I won't spoil for the audience.
Leave a little magic. So in addition to It's a Wonderful Life, music, Michael, you provide during the show, before the show, after the show, right?
Yes.
For example, maybe take us into a break here with... What do you got for us?
Oh, sure. Well,
you just happen to have a guitar wrapped around your neck.
Oh, how about that? What do you know?
I mean, he always does.
He always? I don't think I've ever seen him without a guitar.
I was that guy at the parties in college. Yeah.
But talented. Except he actually could sing.
Yeah, John Belushi never took my guitar and smashed it on the wall. But
wasn't just
a waste. Yeah. So here we go. Now a few words from our sponsors. Who do you choose for theater reviews? Hollywood news and celeb interviews. Sundays at 9, weekday mornings till 10. Catch Dean Richards on WGN.
Wow, look at that. My own song.
There you go.
My own song. You know, I have the lyrics that you gave me, framed lyrics.
Oh, yeah. You put that up on eBay, you'll get tens of dollars.
I would never do such a thing. I have it proudly at my desk here. 10:45, It's a Wonderful Life live in Chicago, is in its 23rd annual production, in case you were counting. It's the 23rd year. It's running through December 22nd. We'll tell you how you can go see it and actually recreate a couple of the scenes when we come right back. It is 10:49. Oh, yeah. I didn't know we're getting some juice harp here this morning. That is a good sound right there. Coming up after 11 o'clock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson and the cast of the new Moana 2. Talked with them last week. We'll share those interviews coming up in just a little while. Meantime, though, we've got the cast of It's a Wonderful Life live in Chicago, 23rd annual production put on by the American Blues Theater. You can get tickets at AmericanBluesTheater.com or by calling 773-654-3103. Michael Mahler is here, Brandon Dahlquist, Audrey Stone Billings, Ian Custer, and J.G. Smith from the cast. And Brandon, what are we going to do here to start things off?
Well, this is what we call the George and Mary meet cute. So, see if you can figure that out.
Hey, Mary, look where we are.
Oh, the old Granville house.
Yeah, I gotta throw a rock.
Oh, no, don't. I love that old house.
Well, no, don't you know about deserted houses? You gotta make a wish, and then you throw a rock.
Oh, George, that place is so lovely. I wish I lived there.
What, that place? Well, I wouldn't live there even as a ghost. Hey, now you watch this, Your Highness. Second floor, right above the parlor. Hot dog!
What's going on over there?
Hey, well, who's that?
It's just Old Man Collins. What'd you wish for, George?
Oh, well, not just one wish. A whole hatful, Mary. Now, I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off of my feet, and I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parthenon, the Colosseum. And then I'll come back here, and I'll go to college, and I'll see what they know. And then, well, I'm going to build things, huh? I'm going to build airfields. I'm going to build skyscrapers 100 stories tall. I'll build bridges a mile long, and then... What, are you going to throw one, too? Say, well, that's pretty good, Mary. Well, now, hey, what did you wish for?
Oh, no, if I tell you, it may not come true.
Well, hey, come on now, Mary. Well, now, what do you want, huh? Do you want the moon? Huh? You just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it. I'll pull it down and give it to you.
I'll take it. And then what?
Then? Well, then you could swallow it. And it all dissolves, see? And then the moonbeams of fingers and your toes and the ends of your hair. And am I talking too much?
Yes! Why don't you kiss her instead of talking her to death?
Oh, you want me to kiss her, huh?
Yeah, sure. Why don't you kiss her instead of talking her to death?
Oh, okay, I will kiss her,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, youth is wasted on the wrong people.
Love it. I love it. I love it.
Truer words never spoken, yeah, right?
And Ian, your characterization of the old man on the porch.
That's right, yeah.
That's fast becoming my favorite character now in this production.
He has a lot of history. You know, he's a lived human being.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So explain, Michael, what goes on now. When somebody comes to the theater, it's more than just sitting down and watching this production, which is done like an old-time, like golden age of radio, show, right?
Yeah, we welcome you in. You know, we're hoping that when people buy tickets that they show up a little bit early because we're all in the theater welcoming the audience into their seats and warming up by playing a bunch of holiday songs. And we introduce them to the different aspects of the radio show, right? Like the Foley and the jingles and the music and how we all change our voices to play all different characters. And there's a whole pre-show that happens even before the story of It's a Wonderful Life even starts.
Yeah, boy, if only somebody had a guitar around their neck.
Yeah.
I think one of the most fun parts that came out of doing this virtually is the artist and Carol mashup that Mike, our resident genius, does.
Yes.
So if you throw out an artist that you love.
Okay.
Any artist?
Mariah Carey.
Oh, sure. Oh.
She's the queen of Christmas.
She's the queen of Christmas.
Let's get a Christmas carol, JG.
Oh, how about Winter Wonderland?
Winter Wonderland by Mariah Carey.
I want to see you do Mariah Carey.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. It's a winter wonderland all across this wonderland. I just want it for my own, more than you have ever known. Make my wish come true. All I want for Christmas is a wonderland.
Look at you. Look at you. Wow.
It's very silly.
Do you have any voice left after that?
Yes. I'll be fine.
I apologize to anybody going to see the show today. The part of Michael Mahler will be played by
Mariah Carey.
By
she's
Mariah
flying
Carey.
In she's available. As we speak.
Hey, got into it. The show is going on till the end of December, right? Mm-hmm. So plenty of opportunities to come and see the show.
Oh, yeah. December 22nd.
22nd, to be exact.
Yes,
okay,
December
very good.
December 22nd.
If people want to get information, AmericanBluesTheater.com. Is a way to order tickets. What else do we have here for us?
I mean, I think there's an iconic scene that...
We would be remiss, Dean, if we didn't ask you.
Yeah, honestly, here. It's the only reason I invite you back. So I can be in one of the
what is the Christmas holiday without this very famous scene?
Yes. Right.
You know your line.
I say it almost every day.
All right. So we've made it to the end of the story, and everyone's very happy. And here comes George running through the streets of Bedford Falls.
Well, I'm going home, Bert. Merry Christmas, Bedford Falls. Merry Christmas, you wonderful old building and loan. Hey, Merry Christmas, Mr. Potter.
And Happy New Year to you, in jail. Now go home, they're waiting for you.
Yes.
I'm very near the theater if you ever need me to
yep.
feel
hey.
Feel
it.
We will keep that in mind, for sure.
We were talking during one of the breaks that Brandon, was that you that accidentally said Harry Potter?
I did, unfortunately. Because it's Henry Potter, as we all know.
Henry Potter?
And so
I don't think I ever knew.
Yes, Henry Potter. And I at one
we're
point
learning things left and right here today.
Very educational.
But I was
John
like,
Foley, Henry Potter.
How did a man like Harry Potter going to spend all that money he makes? And then someone in the room said something about you're a scurvy old spider, and
yeah.
I like the Patronus. You're a scurvy little Patronus.
Yeah, it's a nice mashup.
There you go. For the kids.
A nice cultural mashup. Let me tell you something to our audience. This is just one of the most fun nights that you will have going to see a show. It's something the whole family can enjoy. Take them out. If you're familiar with the movie at all, you'll enjoy this even more. It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago. It's at the American Blues Theater, which their new home is 5627 North Lincoln Avenue. AmericanBluesTheater.com or call 773-654-3103. You have performances today, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
Isn't today the opening?
That's opening.
Today's the opening. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. They came on our stupid show. I really love that. Guys, thank you all so much. All right, Michael, one little song here before to take us out.
Oh, of course. what else do we sing in the show? Oh, we sing... Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of old lang syne?
In jail! All right, thank you, Rob, and Andy, we have quite a few texts directed at you this morning.
Uh-oh.
No, all in a good way.
Okay, good.
I think all in a good way. We were talking about Brian Piccolo earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Andy did a spectacular job filling in on the far-flung forecast earlier today. In fact, people are saying, please take Schwani off the assignment and put Andy on permanently. So we'll take that under consideration. Okay. But in the meantime, it was a really nice far-flung forecast on the premiere of the movie Brian's Song.
Right, 53 years ago yesterday on ABC.
Blows my mind that it's 53 years ago, but I guess that kind of makes sense. But somebody texted in, Dean and Andy, don't forget to mention the author of the book on which the movie was based, Jeannie Morris.
That is correct. Absolutely correct.
Former Chicago sportscaster, wife of the legendary Johnny Morris.
Still holds the Bears receiving record.
Yeah. So she's the one that wrote the book.
Yeah.
Brian's Song.
And I am remiss in leaving that out. We were concentrating so much on where Brian Piccolo was born and just the story of the movie debut that did slip by.
Yeah. Well, and I was just a bundle of tears, really. I got to give Rob a lot of credit. He came in and comforted me during the break.
That was nice of him.
Because I was just a mess as Brian was telling the Brian Piccolo story. So thank you for that, Rob, for helping me through that.
My pleasure.
Yeah. right now, Rob is, I never want to fill in on the show ever again.
It's like, what's going on here?
What is going on? What? 7:08. Andy, I saw the replays of the last minute of the Bears game.
Mm.
Sorry that you saw that. Can you ask Andy what was supposed to happen? What was supposed to happen? Call a timeout?
Yeah, well,
you need to keep that available in case of a sack or tackle. Inbounds seems like a problem was not being able to get the play run quickly enough.
See, here's the problem. The problem has been communication from the sideline since the very beginning of this season, which is why Shane Waldron is no longer the offensive coordinator, and he was fired a couple weeks before Matt Eberflus. There was chaos, and a head coach cannot have that happen in the final 32 seconds of a game where you have to be thinking ahead. You have to be thinking, okay, if this happens, I do this. If that happens, I do that. He didn't seem to have anything really under his own grasp. I mean, because there was a debate about a timeout. He didn't take it. It took the play long to get in because I'm assuming, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm sure the offense probably figured he was going to take a timeout and the play didn't get in. I get the fact that if he sacked, you know, that's a situation, well, you know, you have to get up and try to spike the ball or do something to stop the clock at that point, throw it away. But to have utter chaos just kind of going on with absolutely zero idea of what you're supposed to do, you can't be a head coach in the NFL if that's how you're going to be doing things and thinking.
No plan B, no plan C.
There was no plan A. There was no plan, period.
No plan, period.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's been so disheartening. That was so disheartening, and it all started with that game against Washington where he allowed a little short gain play before the Hail Mary pass that a lot of guys on defense were like, what are we doing? And then you've got a player going over and taunting the crowd, not even ready to play. You still have a timeout. You don't burn the timeout there to make sure everybody's on the same page or at least get him into the huddle. So there's a long list of things, but it's hard to really get into the mind of what Matt Eberflus was actually thinking at that point because I just think it just got away from him.
224 area code. Andy, can a player on the field call timeout?
They can, except that the coach has to see it and the coach has to alert the coach is basically, and the quarterback, I think, are the only two that can call it. But now you're talking about a rookie quarterback here who's trying to get a play in, too, and trying to make the best of the situation. The coach has to be the one overseeing all of this. The coach has to be the guy that is going to say, make a definitive call and make sure that everybody is ready to go. He didn't do it.
Yeah.
And he's doesn't have a job anymore.
And are you optimistic about the new guy?
Well, I like what I've seen so far from his offensive play calling. Caleb Williams the last few weeks has looked really good. I mean, he set the Bears rookie passing record and touchdown passes record. He's got an NFL record now for most pass attempts without an interception. And that they're getting the plays in faster to him. They're getting the ball out of his hand faster. They're moving around the pocket a little bit. They're actually letting him run a little bit as well. And from everything that I've heard and read and seen about Thomas Brown is that even in the background, he has the ear and the respect of the leadership group and also of the quarterback and the offense. So I think that it was a natural to kind of put him in charge. And this is basically, for him, a nice little long kind of audition interview for him.
Yeah. 312 area code. Is Andy ever in fear for his life when he's in studio with Tampa OB when a game turns south?
I'm never in fear for my life. I'm in fear for the table, for the equipment, for their health. I'm not worried about my health.
Have you ever ducked down under the table when they get going?
No, but my dad was listening in Florida one time and texted me, "Are you okay?" And I showed that to Hamp, and Hamp started cracking up because I'm not. Luckily, I'm not the ire of anybody's. They don't have it for me. They have it for the Bears.
Yeah.
And we have a good healthy relationship between the three of us.
And the next time that the three of you will be here in the meat locker,
we will be in the meat locker coming up, I believe, 2:30 next Sunday. It's a 3:30 kickoff. They'll be playing at San Francisco.
Wait a minute. That means I have two full shows today.
You have back-to-back full shows, and I think the schedule makers really knew that you were up to the task, so they scheduled a late afternoon game for the Bears.
Hey, I got to call my agent right now. So for decades, here on our Sunday show and here on WGN in general, when health questions came up, we always turned to Dr. Kevin Most, who retired the beginning of this year and has been enjoying a much more relaxed lifestyle. But we keep up with the good doctor, and our pal Dr. Kevin Most joins us, believe it or not, I can hardly believe it, on a golf course this morning. Is that correct?
Dean, I'm overlooking the Pinehurst number 2 as we speak. But, Dean, one thing, I think your timing was very unusual this year.
How's
you
that?
Didn't invite me on the week before Thanksgiving so we could talk about the high calories. And so I didn't ruin anyone's Thanksgiving this year for the first time in years.
I didn't want all the hate. I didn't want you to have all the hate. for decades, Kevin would get all these emails and texts. Why is Dr. Kevin Most ruining my Thanksgiving, telling me things that I shouldn't eat? We thought we'd give you a break once in a while this year.
That's nice.
Did you have a nice holiday? Were you in town?
No, I was down in North Carolina. We had a very nice holiday. It was 70 degrees here on Thanksgiving Day. I think, it was 20 or 30 up there?
Yeah, it was. It's been suddenly turned chilly, but I mean, nobody can complain about the weather around here this year. We've had an extremely, extremely mild autumn and the early part of winter, and it's really just this week where it's turned a little bit chilly. What are the kinds of things, if I can put you to work, what are the kinds of things that people should be wary of now that the weather has turned a little cold?
Yeah, Dean, you hit on a very good point as far as the weather, the way it's been these last even month, 2 months. At that time of the fall, we start to get colder weather, we get inside, and we start to spread illness. If you look at our flu numbers this year, they're extremely low. Southeast is bumping up a little bit, but everyone else in the country has minimal activity, if any. COVID, very low. The one wild card, though, is we're seeing five times as many whooping cough cases as we have been in the past years. So that's the little bit crazy wild card, which can be a reflection of what happened during COVID, where many people missed out on vaccinations.
Yeah. Do you think that that's what it is, or is there some new strain? I know so many people who have had these uncontrollable coughs and lingering that go on for like a couple of months. They can't just seem to shake it.
Yeah. Yeah, there has been a bad upper respiratory infection that's not flu and not COVID. And some of those people probably did have whooping cough and not even know it. Because you say, well, don't you have to take medicine? The vast majority of people get over whooping cough after a long period of time. But there is medicine that you can take, antibiotics, because it's a bacteria that you can take to clear it up. But I would bet you a lot of the cases of those people that you're saying that had these uncontrollable coughs for a long time had mild cases of whooping cough, because we've seen so much of it.
Yeah. Where should people be in terms of vaccinations right now? I mean, you really guided Chicago through the pandemic with advice on, you know, what we should be doing, what precautions we should take, where we should be in terms of a vaccination schedule. The worst of all that, thank God, is over. Where should we be right now as people are heading into the holiday season, getting ready to go to tons of holiday parties and family get-togethers and potential super spreader events?
Absolutely. You know, the one thing that we did, we got really lucky on, was that we didn't have an early flu season. So when you had millions of people traveling on Thanksgiving Day, they weren't going from highly infectious areas to lower infectious areas and spreading influenza. That being said, we know influenza is going to get here. It's hit hard in Australia, so we know it's going to probably hit hard. It hit hard late in Australia, the southern hemisphere, so that's kind of what we look at. So I would say to people, make sure, especially those over the age of 65, go get the high-dose trivalent vaccine for flu prior to, I mean, get it now. You still are 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks away from Christmas, but like you said, there's a lot of parties, a lot of gatherings at that time. Get your protection now. It takes you a good 10 days. You go get it today, you're protected by the 11th of the month, right when you're hitting the peak season for holiday parties and close social gatherings.
What about COVID vaccines? Where should we be with all that?
Yeah, absolutely. If you haven't gotten a COVID vaccine and you haven't had a case of COVID in the past 90 days, then certainly get that COVID vaccine. Again, I'll look at Australia. We always look to the southern hemisphere to see what happened during their winter to predict what happened during ours. They had increased cases of COVID. They had increased hospitalizations and, unfortunately, increased deaths. So we're sitting here looking at everybody saying, all right, we have the JN1 strain out there right now. The vaccine, the newest vaccine that came out this fall, protects very well against it. So if you have had a natural case of it in the last 90 days, okay, you can probably wait till after the first of the year. But if you haven't and you've been fairly healthy, don't push your luck. Get that COVID vaccine. Then you will be covered against the new strain through the holidays and through the spring.
I just think about all of the information that we went through during COVID of bringing groceries home and washing the packages and wearing gloves in the stores, only going one direction, one-way aisles in the stores. Remember all that we went through, and you got us through all that with the best information that was available. Thank goodness. Let me just ask again now, if people are going to get their flu shots that you're recommending, people are going to get their COVID shots, is there anything else that they should make sure that they're up to date with right now? And can you get them all at one time? Can you get it all?
So,
go ahead.
Yes, you can definitely get COVID and flu at one time. Get them at the same time. I got mine both same time, same arm, and did fine. So I certainly would recommend, if you're going to go in to do it, do it, because we all procrastinate and we won't get that one. The other thing I would look is to see, when did you have your last pertussis shot? People will often remember, oh, I cut my finger and I had to get stitches, and that's when I got my tetanus shot. And when you get your tetanus shot now, you're getting a pertussis shot with it. So it's just not the DT, it's the Tdap. So you're getting the tetanus and pertussis at the time, at the same time now. So those would be the big ones, and especially anybody who's going to be around young children and young babies. If you haven't gotten a pertussis shot, please get it. They have very poor protection and really very devastating illness to young kids.
Somebody on the text line, 312 area code, is it just as good going to a pharmacy to get your vaccines as it is going to your doctor's office?
Well, that's an interesting question, because the way the question was asked, certainly you're going to get the exact same shot. All of us have been in the pharmacies lately. You know, if you have been, pharmacists are phenomenal information people. They know a lot. They can answer a lot of questions. And in some cases, they can take more time than the doctor's office can. So it really depends. If you're really a well-educated person, then I would go wherever the ease is. If you really have some questions, then I would make sure you set an appointment with the doctor so they know they have time versus just someone giving you the shot quickly. Or spend the time with the pharmacist, ask them the questions. People are afraid to ask questions sometimes, especially to pharmacists, but I'll tell you, they are a wealth of knowledge, whether it's side effects from your medication or about the vaccines. So certainly, they don't just count out a 90-day pill package and put them in a little plastic container and hand them to you. They know all about side effects. They know all about everything. So certainly, getting that, and it's much easier. And I'll tell you, I don't promote any grocery store or anything, but I got my shot at Jewel. They gave me a 10% coupon off my groceries for the day as well. So it's a free vaccine plus 10% off your groceries.
I did the same thing. I got my 10% coupon, and I sat there. I was sort of laughing sitting there. You know, there were two or three other people also waiting for vaccines. Like, we came here to get coleslaw, and instead we're getting vaccines. Come for the coleslaw, stay for the flu shot. Is how that works. But I'll tell you what, you know, in all seriousness, to get information wherever you can, maybe you notice this now that you're, not in your office every day anymore. It's hard to get in to see a doctor now. It takes a very, very, very long time. Something's happened in the health system where, doctors' times are stretched, nurses, practitioners, all the people who used to be able to get you into a doctor's office within a day or two, that doesn't happen anymore. Now it's at least a week or two, sometimes a month or two, to get into a doctor. So how do you know when you've got something serious enough that may require getting into a doctor's office ASAP or going into the emergency room?
Yeah, Dean, it's very interesting. When we look at the predicted shortage of physicians, nurses, nurse practitioners, and physician's assistants, the issue and the problem that we have right now is only going to get worse. It is going to explode as far as we do not have enough caregivers, providers, to take care of these people. So then you do have to go to the place that, okay, they can get me in the quickest. It may not be the best place, unfortunately. Sometimes being in the doctor's office is better than being in the emergency room with not only the copay costs, but also the information. And the next thing they're going to say is follow up with your doctor. But like you said, a week, 2 weeks, most people are very happy with that. We're having people trying to get into a new doctor and not getting in until June or July.
Right.
And I'll tell you, being a doctor, I'm certainly spoiled, right? I can call my friends and say, hey, can you get Dean in to get this done? Or can you get Joe in? And they do me a favor. Everybody doesn't have those connections. So we have to understand it. Like I told you, I think we talked a couple months ago or 4 weeks ago, I think. I'm kind of working with this company, Limbo Medicine, to try to figure out how can we make it easier for people to get through the system and get the information that they need, mainly for chronic illnesses that they don't have. The doctor doesn't have the time to sit and spend a half hour to explain to them, here's what diabetes is, here's how it's going to affect your body, and here's why it's so important that you take your medicine, do your exercises, and do all the things that's going to minimize the effects of a chronic disease like diabetes.
So people want to get more information on that. Kev, what's the best way to do that?
Well, it's just starting up right now, so we're not out in the public right now.
A little early.
But look for it.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, a little early. But probably, I think you'll see something, hopefully a big splash here, probably in the next month.
Okay. Keep us posted. Enjoy your golf game today. A lot of people on the text line saying how much they miss you, how much they love you. They're pointing out that here's one. The air quality is worse in North Carolina today than it is in Chicago. They're trying to give it to you a little bit, apparently. So the listeners haven't changed that much since you've been gone. But we all miss you. We all love you. Dr. Kevin Most, really appreciate hearing from you, pal. Thank you so much for everything.
You got it. We'll talk soon.
One of the songs from the number one movie in America this weekend, actually number one movie around the world, Moana 2. It's been an absolute smash, taking in the 5-day Thanksgiving weekend, the holiday weekend. It's taken in $386 million. That makes it the second biggest global debut of the year, just beyond Deadpool and Wolverine. And not surprising. I mean, it's a good movie. I don't think it's quite up to the first Moana movie, but it is still a pretty great movie, especially for the whole family, especially for the kids, especially for little girls in the family, where the message of the movie, you know, pretty much tells you you can do anything, you can be anything. That's really the moral of the story. Last week, I had the, bone-crushing job. Talk about a tough job. I had to go to Hawaii to interview the cast of the movie. Poor Dean had to go to Hawaii to interview the cast of the movie. And that includes Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who we'll hear from in just a minute. That includes the new songwriters for the Moana movie, Abigail Barlow and Emily Bear, who happens to be from Rockford, by the way. We'll hear from them in just a minute. But I wanted to start off with my one-on-one interview with Uli'i Cravalho. Uli'i Cravalho. She is the voice of Moana. She's the one that you just heard singing a moment ago. And my question to her on the beaches of Oahu were how life-changing this whole Moana experience has been for her.
How do I even begin? I was cast as Moana when I was 14. I turned 24 in just a couple of days. So I have spent a decade with this character in my bones. But truthfully, I have always felt Moana, whether I had a name for her or not. And I think that's what really resonates with a lot of audience members and young women specifically, that they also have always had Moana in their bones, that they are strong, that they are not afraid to go beyond the reef, that they have such love for their community and their people. These are all themes that just come naturally, you know? So to see a young woman on the open ocean taking charge and at the helm of her own ship feels so good.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, that's the power of this, isn't it? Mm. Of the message outside of the actual story that you're seeing on the screen, the message that you can do anything.
Yeah.
Really is what this is about. Did you approach this differently now than when you did when you were 14 years old and did the first movie?
That's a great question. So when I was 14, I was just really happy to be there, to be fair. I said yes to everything. I had no technique for singing. I had no technique for voice acting. It was my first job. But as the years have passed, I also have continued voicing Moana. We have firework shows. We have Disney on Ice. We have Lego princess movies. And for those roles, I always pitch my voice up. I always try to match 14-year-old self. So if I were to say it then, I would say, I am Moana of Motunui. Like, I'm up there. So for this film, I was really grateful that I get to keep my voice in its lower register. 3 years have passed since we've last seen Moana, and I love that we get to see her growth, and I myself have grown right along with her.
Yeah. Is it liberating in a way to do the voice as opposed to being on camera and performing it in a live human way, live action way?
I completely understand what you're saying. It's a different art form. I really like voice acting because, imagine, I'm in a booth that's quite dark. I don't have to memorize any lines. I don't look like this. I don't have hair and makeup on. I don't have an outfit on. I just show up and do voices.
I pictured you looking like this every single minute.
Very kind.
Yeah.
No. I act like a little gremlin in the booth. I do funny takes. I make strange noises. You know how much Moana runs? I'm going, I love voice work. But live action is different in that, first and foremost, I always ask myself, what do I do with my hands? You know, it's just a different level of awareness, I think. So I love voice acting in that I get to just have fun.
How have kids reacted to you once they've learned that you're Moana, and especially little girls, I would think, who must find you the most empowering person ever in their lives?
That's so kind to say. Mixed reactions. Sometimes
kids understand. They go, oh my goodness, you sound like Moana. You are Moana. Sometimes they look at me and they go, I don't care what you say. You're not Moana. You don't look like her. You're not wearing the outfit. You don't have, like, long flowing hair. Where's Hey Hey? Like, it kind of creates a mind warp. But what's really special is I realize playing a character like Moana means I'm almost like Santa, and that there's a really special age where kids just believe in the character and believe everything that she represents and the journey that she goes on across the open ocean. They laugh every time Hey comes on screen, and that makes my heart melt, but also makes me beam with pride.
Uli'i Cravalho, she is the voice of Moana in both of the Moana movies, the first and the second, that just opened the day before Thanksgiving and is breaking every box office record. In the first movie, Lin-Manuel Miranda of Hamilton fame did the music for the film. In this one, a pair of 20-something songwriters, Abigail Barlow and Emily Bear, Emily from Rockford, Illinois, did the music, and we'll hear from them. Number one movie around the world, Moana 2, that features Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who we'll hear from in just a moment. It features the music of two young songwriters, Abigail Barlow and Emily Bear. Is originally from Rockford, Illinois. She actually made her professional music debut at Ravinia and was spotted on the Ellen DeGeneres Show. She created her own first music under the mentorship of the great Quincy Jones. From there, she and Abigail kind of collaborated on a bunch of projects, including the unofficial Bridgerton musical, for which they both won the Grammy Award for Best Musical Theater Album. Now, Emily has since gone on to work with Beyonce. She's been involved in a number of projects, but she and Abigail both were called in to do the music for this new Moana movie. And it has been a long road since Rockford, Illinois. How does the path from Rockford bring you to beautiful Oahu?
Lots of tiny little life choices.
Yeah.
I always find it so funny to, like, look back and trace the steps that led you to where you are, because, like, there's a bunch of random ones that led me to meet Abigail and to get this job and to move to L.A., you know? It's crazy.
Yeah, so were you tapped into music and such when you were, you know, coming up in Illinois?
Oh, yeah, I started really young. And I guess performing-wise, I got my start because I was in the Ellen Show like 6 times when I was a kid. And then I started performing everywhere, but I studied at the Music Institute of Chicago. My family still lives in Rockford. I have, like, deep ties. But then I studied at Juilliard and NYU, and then I started writing for orchestra and film, blah, 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 blah.
You probably can't wait to get back just in time for winter, right?
Oh, yep. I'm going back on the 17th.
There you go.
Love.
I'll be right there with you. Tell us about what's your background? Where are you from?
I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. Small town girl, big dreams, vibes. And I have 3 sisters who were in the arts, in musical theater, and my favorite line as a kid was, I can do that. You know, if they can do it, so can I.
Yeah.
And probably better. And
I
in heels.
I can do anything. Anything you can do, I can do better.
That one. And so I grew up, you know, in singing lessons. I was a competitive dancer, and then I did musical theater for a really long time before graduated high school early, found a passion for songwriting, and moved out to L.A.
How about that? That's amazing. So then what specifically brought you to the Moana franchise?
Well, we had lunch with this guy. His name is Tom McDougall, and he works at Disney, and it was just a general meeting, and usually those don't really amount to much. But at the end, he was like, you know, I might have a project in mind for you too. And we didn't hear anything for about a year. And then we got an email saying, hey, they're making a Moana sequel. Would you want to talk to the filmmakers? And we said, huh, would we?
Yeah. Let me think about that.
Maybe not, but maybe we should.
And then, so it happens. Mm-hmm. And do they give you a script? Do they give you storyboards? I mean, how do you even begin the
process of writing the music?
It was a big conversation. We got in a room with a creative team and, you know, a story room with beautiful concept art on the walls and some quotes that were really the anchor of the story. And we got to know the characters a little bit. They also gave us lots of research and resources to help us with the cultural anchor that is Moana. So that's kind of where we began, was just a big conversation.
Yeah, I mean, animation is really interesting because it's constantly evolving. And even till the very last second, things are changing. So it took on many, many lives before it ended up the version that you saw in front of you. And the
so,
music is
so when
different.
You say that it's changing, like you write a song, you've got it set, and then the next day it's like, we're changing that, we're cutting that.
Yeah.
We want that shorter, we want it longer, we want it more emotional, we want it...
Exactly.
Like that.
And as the story evolves, because it's not just the music, everything is changing, And it all grows together because we start from a script. We can't work to animation because how can they animate something that's not written yet? And vice versa. So, I mean, we've probably done hundreds of different versions of these songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything from big structural changes to tiny little lyric edits. I mean, and everything in between.
Lots of notes. Life is a classroom.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there one song about which you guys are most proud or... You think it's going to be the big breakout song of...
Well, my personal favorite is Beyond, but the one that was the hardest to create and that I'm most proud of is Chi Who, because that was a big lift.
Yeah. I love Beyond. I think it's, you know, working on it and getting to write an I Want song for a Disney heroine was just like, I'll remember forever.
For those who haven't seen the movie yet, can you give us a couple of words from Beyond?
What lies beyond, under skies I've never seen? Will I lose myself between my home and what's unknown if I go beyond? Okay. Come on, duet.
There you go. A little live performance there from Abigail Barlow and Rockford's Emily Baird, the songwriters for Moana 2. Which also co-stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson in the character of the demigod Moana.
At the world premiere last night, it was so cool to see it in the outdoors.
Yeah.
You guys with your welcoming messages.
Yeah.
But the ceremony that begun it all, I was sitting with fans, and the tangible sense of Samoan and Hawaiian pride that this movie and you brought out was really, I got swept up in it. I got a little teary-eyed, to tell you the truth.
Thank you.
Because it was really something you don't expect at a movie premiere.
No, you really don't, Dean, and thank you for saying that. You know, that's the thing, what you felt last night at our premiere, very ceremonial. Before the movie itself, we just wanted to take this opportunity and this moment to illuminate it and to share it. To share the mana with you and with our guests and with everybody who came last night, because, you know, it's a big deal. We love what we do. We love these movies. We've talked about movies over the years. But every once in a while, I think if you get lucky, you know, you have a movie like this that not only taps into culture, but it is culture. And it's a real culture here. So I'm happy you enjoyed it.
Yeah. And this morning I wake up to see pictures of you shooting the live-action version of Moana that's going to be out, I think, in 2026.
Yes.
It's going to be a while. Could you ever possibly imagine that this would become a franchise like this?
No, not at all. Not only did I not imagine Moana would become a franchise, you hope Disney does it very well, but also when we made the first Moana, it was about our culture and in our way, our little islands of Samoa and Tahiti and Tonga and Fiji and Hawaii, and so you never know how it's going to turn out. And now, years later, it's growing into this franchise and this universe, and we did. I just wrapped live-action Moana with Tommy Kail, who directed a little thing called Hamilton.
Have I heard of that?
You might have heard about that one.
Yeah.
And we shot that here in Hawaii, and I wrapped it here, and it was really, really special. So the way cool. Moana is growing is just awesome. You know, Dean, 15 miles from here, that way. I was here getting arrested when I was a kid and doing crazy. All this stuff. Yeah, and here we are, full circle.
That's crazy. I think that's why young people really can relate to you, and why they were like so proud to be part of this event last night. Young kids were like shouting out things and showing their pride. The kid right next to me, I am Hawaiian.
Oh.
I am Hawaiian. I was like, wow. When do you see that from a teenager, right?
No, when do you see that from a teenager? I have chills. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. Also, when do you see that from a teenager? But also, again, you get lucky if you're doing something for the culture, but part of something that's mainstream entertainment is very special. And they meaning our Polynesian people, Hawaiian, Samoan, regardless of where you're from, Maori, it doesn't matter. Like, they feel a strong sense of pride.
Yeah.
For this one.
What are you making for Thanksgiving? Oh,
one
are we out?
Okay. One more.
You had? Yep. What are you going to be cooking for Thanksgiving?
Well, what I'm going to be cooking is my appetite, because I don't cook very well. But we have some wonderful cooks in the family who are going to be cooking. I think we keep it traditional.
Yeah.
And then my mom comes in over the top with some teriyaki chicken wings and things like that.
Yeah, that sounds so good. The teriyaki chicken wings for Thanksgiving. Our pal Dwayne The Rock Johnson, he is Maui in the new movie again, Moana 2. It's in theaters now. How lucky we are getting a little Ron Brown on the show this week.
Yes, well, always happy to do it. How are you doing, Dean?
Nice to see you.
Yes, it's fun to be here. And I'm hoping that Swanee is having a great time out in old Virginia.
I hope he gets a flat tire today.
He's not sent any pictures, any well wishes, anything like that?
He didn't say anything.
Nothing.
Nothing. Not at all.
We're dead to him.
Oh, maybe he's got a flat tire somewhere. I don't know.
I'm hoping.
It's possible.
I'm hoping. And no jack in the trunk.
But you're talking about the tool.
That's mean.
I was thinking about Jack Heinrich, but
he does have.
Didn't know how to take that at first.
Producer Jack doesn't change tires now that he's a famous sportscaster.
That's right. He's doing a terrific job. I like working with him.
Yeah, it's just it's a matter of weeks until he tells us goodbye on this show.
We've got a deep bench at WGN. That's for sure.
Yeah. Any comment, Jack? Any final words before you leave us? To become a famous sportscaster. Oh, wait a second.
You muted me.
Yeah.
me and Ron were holding down the fort during the holidays.
That was it. And we had turkey.
Yeah, we did.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was fun.
They were very good to us here during the holidays, giving us turkey, mashed potatoes, pumpkin pie.
Everything.
Yeah, the whole work.
It's great.
What was your favorite thing? Andy, I'm going to ask you this too. Okay. What's the favorite thing that you've eaten for the Thanksgiving holiday?
Well, if you'll start with me, I'm going to go with apple pie.
Really?
Yes.
Not pumpkin?
No.
I don't think you like the texture of pumpkin pie.
I don't. Which
may explain why there's a full pecan pie in our lunchroom.
Yeah,
right,
I saw that too.
Nobody has touched.
That can wait right there.
Well, that was Hochberg yesterday dropped that off.
Of course it was. He always leaves food everywhere.
At least there wasn't rabbit paella.
Not this year.
Yeah. With leeches on it. Yeah, this was a little better. But apple pie. A la mode?
There was no a la mode. My wife and I were happy to be with the Northwestern basketball team for their celebration. They had a celebration on a Wednesday night in Arizona. Yeah. A lot of the families were there to watch their sons play some hoops, and they had a nice spread for us, a turkey, some ham, some green beans, some stuffing, and of course I gravitated right to the dessert table.
Of all that, your favorite was apple pie?
Well, I mean, yeah.
Okay.
I'm a dessert guy.
All right. That's all right. Jack, famous sportscaster Jack.
I don't know about that. I like my grandma makes...
Jack is just waiting until he can push Dave Ennett out.
No, not at all.
And take over being sports director.
No. I like my grandma makes this mac and cheese.
Oh, that's good.
And mashed potatoes.
Yeah, that's good eating right there.
But I'll pretty much eat anything.
Yeah. Not turkey.
I mean, I'll eat the turkey.
I find this year that people are like so-so on turkey. They could like take or leave the turkey.
Yeah.
Ron?
Yeah, I was going to say turkey because it's about the only time during the year that I do eat it. And so it's a nice little treat.
I love turkey.
We had the whole fixings.
I had a wonderful Thanksgiving dinner. My nephew made Thanksgiving dinner by himself.
Very cool.
He's actually quite a good chef. He spatchcocked the turkey.
Oh, really?
Do you know what that is?
I have no idea what that is.
No. I was wondering if I had to dump that.
Andy, are you shocked that I said the word spatchcock?
I just was like, what, huh?
Jack got a panicked look on his face.
Yeah, he was reaching for the dump button, weren't
he? Yeah. Spatchcocking is when you cut the backbone out of a chicken or turkey.
Okay.
And then you flatten the bird out.
Huh.
You flatten it out like on a sheet pan or on a grill, and it cooks in less than an hour. The whole bird, because it's, you know, it's flattened out.
Yeah.
And so my nephew Nick did that.
Cool.
And it was delicious. It was nice and moist. It was really good. We had all the sides, all the fixings, everything. But let me tell you what my favorite thing is. This is my new favorite thing to do on Thanksgiving when I get my leftovers, is I get a couple of slices of sourdough bread, toast it a little bit. I put some turkey, sliced turkey on it. I put some cranberry sauce on top of the turkey. I put a layer of stuffing, a layer of sweet potatoes, and sometimes I'll also put mashed potatoes on it. And it's now I call it my Thanksgiving sandwich.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's an entire Thanksgiving dinner as a sandwich.
I think that Ross and Friends had one of those that Sister Monica made, and someone stole his sandwich, and they put a dampened slice of bread in between.
Yeah.
He calls it the moist maker.
I think we have to hit the dump button on that, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, that sounds delicious, by the way.
That sandwich is amazing. Sandwich is absolutely amazing.
That's a day after a treat, right?
Oh, baby, is it
day
ever.
After that, the day after that.
Oh, I've had it every day since Thanksgiving. I may go get some more turkey and make it myself just so I can keep the sandwiches. The original Christmas Baby Please Come Home. 12:15, this is Dean Richards. Sunday morning on WGN, now Sunday afternoon, I guess. Going to be slipping into our Food Time show. This coming Wednesday on my TV cooking segment, I'm going to be doing some Christmas appetizers, because we're all, you know, going to be in holiday party mode between now and the end of the month. Thought I'd give you a couple of ideas of a few appetizers that I'm going to do on TV this week. But I'll tell you what, when we've opened up our phone line and asked you for some of your favorite recipes for different things, I've gotten some spectacular recipe ideas from some of you, and I've done them on TV. I've stolen your recipes. I readily admit it. I've stolen your recipes. And I have made them on TV and shared them with our TV audience. And I would love to do that again if you've got favorite appetizers that you do. Appetizers that you know are, you know, major home runs, go for it. Give me a call, 312-981-7200, or you can text it in if you want. Same number, 312-981-7200. You know what makes a great appetizer? Pizza. Just, you know, if you're going to order a pizza from someplace, great. Cut it into, you know, smaller bite size. You know, like appetizer portions, a little bit smaller. I wouldn't do slices, I don't think. I never do slices anyway. I always, when I have pizza at home, whether I make it myself or order it from someplace, I always ask for tavern cut. I like the small pieces better. But for pizza as an appetizer, even smaller pieces, you know, so it can be like finger food. And for a holiday table, I would put green bell pepper and red bell pepper. You get the red and the green. And it looks very festive. And you put, you know, your Parmesan, you put your mozzarella cheese on there. Cook it as, you know, per directions, whether you're doing it from scratch. Good for you if you're doing it from scratch, because it doesn't get much better than that. You can do it in the oven. I know lots of people who get that pizza stone out on the grill. Even when it's cold outside like it is today, they get that pizza stone out there. Or a lot of people now have these, you know, ovens that are specifically for pizzas that you can do in cold weather because it's electric. That's a fantastic, pizza or appetizer idea. I've given this recipe a million times, and I've got it posted on my TV cooking website. if you want to make my grandmother's pimento spread. It's not like any other pimento spread that I have had. You got to love olives because it's loaded with, you know, like diced Spanish olives. But it's nothing more than cream cheese, the diced olives, a little bit of the olive juice from the jar, and some walnuts and pecans. You mix the sour cream together, not the sour cream, but the cream cheese, and you mix it into in a bowl. You take if you're going to take one 8-ounce bar of the cream cheese, I would take about 3/4 of a small jar of the Spanish olives, and I chop them up pretty fine. And then mix that into the cream cheese. Mix it, mix it, mix it, mix it real good. I put it onto a piece of plastic wrap so I can form it into a ball very easily and not make a mess all over the place. It's much easier to do when you put it on a piece of plastic. Form it into a ball and then roll it in some finely diced walnuts or pecans, whichever you like better. Put it in the fridge. Let it set a little bit. And it's good to go. My grandmother, don't ask me how my grandmother from Greece and pretty much only made Greek food her whole life, how she got this super American Good Housekeeping magazine recipe of a cheese ball. But she made it at every occasion, served it with Ritz crackers, which is what I do, and it's a hit everywhere I take it. My grandmother's, my yaya's pimento cheese ball. It's absolutely delicious. It could not be any easier. And I guarantee you that it'll be a big smash on your appetizer table. It, for people who like olives, because there's a definite predominant flavor of olives in this, the Spanish olives. Surprisingly, some people don't like olives. I don't get that, but because I love them. But some people don't. This is not the recipe for you. But if you want to take a look, WGNTV.com/DeanCooks is where we keep all my recipes, is where we keep the videos of all of the segments that I do on television. Everything culinary, anything regarding cooking on my TV cooking segment, WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. And, by the way, if you want to just get my recipes that I do every week automatically sent to you, all you have to do is text the word cooks to 97999. And that'll put you on the automatic list. And when I make new things, you'll automatically get the recipes for them. Like the Christmas appetizers that I'm going to do this year, I'm going to do another dip that is super delicious. I'll tell you about it in just a second. I'm going to do a some feta cheese triangles, not made with phyllo dough, like the tiropitas that you might get in a Greek restaurant. This is puffed pastry stuffed with feta cheese and some herbs. Super delicious, but a great, great Christmas appetizer. And I know I have one more that I can't think of right at the moment. What is the third one? I'm going to look it up. After this break, I'll tell you what it is. Next on WGN. Yes, indeed. 1227. All right, my phone line is open, 312-981-7200. If you've got a Christmas appetizer that is a home run every time you serve it, I want to hear about it, maybe steal it, and prepare it on television on my Wednesday cooking segment on WGN-TV Morning News. From the 847 area code, we listen to Dean's show every Sunday from Grand Junction, Colorado. Hello, Grand Junction. The highlight of my week is when I get the link to his recipes every week. Aren't you nice? Thank you for listening. Sure appreciate it. Here is one that says, let's see. cream cheese, lots of minced garlic, and sliced black olives, all in the cream cheese. Mix it all together, serve it with Melba rounds. I think I like the Melba. I mean, my grandmother used to serve it with Ritz crackers. So, if we're, you know, if we're going strictly old school, the Ritz crackers. But the Ritz crackers do fall apart pretty easily. So I think the Melba rounds is a better idea. It says similar to Dean's grandma's recipe. It is. With the black olive spread as opposed to the Spanish olives mixed in the cream cheese. Some good suggestions there. Oh, that third appetizer recipe that I'm going to do on TV this week is I'm going to give you the full recipe on it in a couple of minutes because we're going to go to Ron Brown on the news in a second. But I'm going to do a simple shrimp dip that is so delicious, so good. I'll tell you how to make that. I'm going to do a feta cheese stuffed puff pastry. So delicious, so easy to make. All these things are super easy. And the one that I couldn't remember is a skewer. I like to do skewers for appetizers. I do like little mini caprese skewers where on a toothpick, I'll put a cherry tomato, a piece of basil, and a mozzarella ball. Sprinkle it with some olive oil, salt and pepper, maybe a little balsamic vinegar. But those are fantastic appetizers. But the skewer that I'm going to show you how to make on TV this coming Wednesday are tortellini skewers, where I take spinach tortellini packaged. You want to make it yourself? Knock yourself out. I'm going to use spinach packaged tortellini, cherry tomatoes, mozzarella, and just one after the other on a wooden toothpick, and they can be served cold. I'll tell you exactly how to make it and what else goes with it right after we get caught up with news.
Have a holly jolly Christmas.
It's 12:36, and this is our Food Time Show. Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show, focusing in on Christmas appetizers this week. It's what I'm going to be making on my TV cooking segment. Every Wednesday, about 9:30 in the morning, I whip up something on our WGN TV morning news. Generally pretty tasty. Generally, I don't injure myself or burn myself or cut myself, although it's happened. I predict it's going to be an easy week because I don't think I've got too many things that are very dangerous to prepare this week as I do some Christmas appetizers. But let me find out about Carrie's recipe. Hi, you're on WGN.
Hey, Dean, how you doing?
Hey, bud.
Hey, so, yeah, I've got one that doesn't fail. The beauty of this one is you can use it as an appetizer, and then you're going to have leftovers, so you can actually use it as a little extra dessert afterwards.
Oh, nice.
Maybe use a different wine. So what you do is you get some grapes, either red or green, doesn't matter. Just make sure they're big grapes, big as you can find.
Yeah, nice and sweet.
Yep, nice and sweet, plump. Yep. Then what you do is you take, you can vary this a billion ways, but take blue cheese, if you like blue cheese, and cream cheese, just one box of cream cheese and one thing of crumbled blue cheese. And you want to mix that together. To do that, you need a little bit of liquid. So you can use maybe some port or some sherry, just a couple tablespoons, just enough to get it mixed up.
Okay, all right.
So you've got this, like, thick cheese mixture. And here's where it gets fun. You get your hands dirty. Your kids, teenagers might like this, too. They can help out. You take each grape, and you coat the grape with the cheese mixture.
Oh, you dip the grape in the cheese mixture.
You roll. You have to kind of pack it with your hands because the cheese is kind of, it's firm cheese, right?
Yeah.
So you get a nice layer on there, and here's what gets good. Now you put it in the fridge, let it set up a little bit, and you were talking about nuts before. Oh. So what you do is you take some ground hazelnut or walnuts or almonds.
Nice.
And you roll them in that.
Nice, nice.
And then you can put a little toothpick in each one, and like I said, it's a great appetizer. When everybody comes over, they're having a dry Chardonnay or something, and then afterwards you're going to have leftovers, and they're like, "Those are still around. Let's have a glass of sweet wine or something."
Carrie,
it's amazing.
That is fantastic.
You mentioned stealing recipes. Okay, this is from Taylor Florence's first cookbook when he used to cook before he started driving food trucks on this food network,
right.
Whatever he does.
Right.
But so I've modified it a little bit. But again, the beauty is you can add, you can change the cheeses, you can do goat cheese, you can change the nuts.
Sure.
But it's never failed. Everybody loves it.
Oh my gosh, that's a fantastic recipe. And the sweetness, here's what I love. The sweetness of the grape with the tartness of the blue cheese.
Exactly.
The crunch.
It goes with anything. It goes with anything too.
Holy smokes, that's fantastic. I'm definitely going to try it at home.
You can find, it's in Tyler Florence's first cookbook. And like I said, I modified it, and you probably will too. Whatever liquid, whatever kind of wine you want to use, whatever cheeses you want to use, whatever nuts you want to use, you can, vary it however you want to.
Yeah,
so,
I can see where a nice port would be tasty in that.
Yep. Port or a nice dry sherry.
Yeah. That's a fantastic one, Kerry.
And they're pretty too. They look beautiful too. You know, they're and they're easy to eat because you put a toothpick in and they're
finger food. Yeah, finger food. You can't beat that. That's the deal with. With appetizers, you want to put them out. You don't want, if you're having a holiday get together, you don't want to be working your butt off.
You want a big bowl of dripping quesadilla.
that's kind of a mess. But here, these the olives covered in cheese, you can do those the 2 days before.
Absolutely.
Put them in the fridge and it's done.
In the fridge, yeah.
Just put the platter out. Done. Love it.
Yeah, definitely. I've done it a day or two in advance. And
sure.
Grapes, they start, you put them in the fridge and good to go.
Kerry, job well done. Wow, that's fantastic.
Thanks,
appreciate the call. Wow, that is a good one. I am definitely going to look into stealing that one.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate the call. I've got a lot of them on our text line. Also, here's one from the 630 area code. Dean, we make this every year. It's always a hit. It's also good on a sandwich. It is Reuben spread. Now, listen to this. It's like a Reuben sandwich that you make into a spread that you can put on crackers or, just spread it on bread. I could see this on a nice rye bread. But here's what's in it. 3 ounces of softened cream cheese, 1/4 cup of sour cream, 1/2 cup of grated Swiss cheese. A lot of recipes, by the way, call for Gruyere cheese. That's basically Swiss cheese. So Gruyere cheese is pretty expensive. Swiss cheese, a little more reasonable. So I would use Swiss cheese. But anyway, 1/2 cup of grated Swiss cheese, 4 ounces of diced corned beef, 1/4 cup of drained sour cream, 2 tablespoons of Thousand Island dressing, and maybe a tablespoon or two of milk for thinning it if needed. You combine all those ingredients in a pan or a dish, put it on the stove or in the microwave and heat it through and serve it with party rye. You know those little squares of rye bread? Used to be Rübschlager bread. But you can still find that, delicious square bread now these days. That's a good one. I like that, the Reuben spread. That sounds absolutely delicious. Here is one from the 847 area code. Dean, my mom used to make this for parties. Anytime you inject mom or grandmother into any of these recipes, I know it's going to be delicious. Mix Miracle Whip and the green Kraft can of powdery Parmesan cheese. Spread it on a little piece of round cocktail rye bread. Top it with minced onion and broil it until it's golden. It's salty, cheesy appetizer, delicious, good memories. Yeah, you can use any kind of Parmesan cheese on that. But, moms would have used the Kraft Parmesan cheese, the powdery Parm in the green can, absolutely. Yeah, that sounds good. Actually, the shrimp dip that I'm going to be doing on TV this week also includes Miracle Whip. It's a shrimp dip. Compliments of my cousin Eileen. She made it on Thanksgiving, and it was delicious. An 8-ounce package of cream cheese, a small can. Go to the canned fish section and get a can of tiny shrimp. It says tiny shrimp right on the label. A cup of Miracle Whip, a little bit of chili sauce, a little bit of horseradish, some minced green onions, some garlic salt, and Tabasco sauce. Now, you mix all of this. You put this in a bowl and mix it up with the mixer because you want to break up the shrimp a little bit. They're tiny, and they break up, you know, so blend them as much as you want. If you want it chunky with shrimp bits, you know, do it that way. If you want it really like a nice smooth dip, do it that way. I like to leave it somewhat chunky. So this is going to go in a with a hand mixer, or maybe in a just pulse it carefully in a food processor. Put it all together. It's better if it sits overnight in the fridge, but that's all there is to it. Then you serve it in a bowl, call it a day. There's nothing to it. But there you go, Miracle Whip. You know, it's one of those retro foods. But it sure is delicious when it comes to appetizers like that. Quick break, and we'll get to more of your texts. Who's got a holiday recipe appetizer on our phone line? 312-981-7200. The most eatenest time of the year, I know that.
Everyone telling you be of good cheer.
Boy, we love to cook around the holidays, don't we? Thanksgiving's over, and now it's holiday appetizers.
It's the high.
Then Christmas, Hanukkah recipes, New Year's Eve. Some good stuff. We're talking holiday appetizers today. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for you to call in and give me your holiday recipe. Or you can text it in as well. Love to hear your voice, though. 312-981-7200, 847 area code. Said, Dean, you talked about your grandmother's pimento cheese recipe, but you did not mention pimento. I did not mention pimento. Very true. But the pimento comes from the Spanish olives that you dice and include with the cream cheese. So you're going to take the Spanish olives, which are the nice green olives. It's got the red little piece of pimento right in the middle of it. You dice that up pretty good, mix it in with the cream cheese, roll it in a ball. I do it in plastic first. It's a lot easier to handle. And then I coat it, roll it in nuts. You can use small pieces of walnut or pecan or almonds, and then put it back in the fridge so it hardens up a little bit. But yeah, if you want to get the recipes, actually somebody else texted in, how do I get your recipes sent to me? That's on our TV website. That is WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. That's where we have all the videos of my segments. That's where we have all the recipes. That's where we have everything having to do with cooking. WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. Or if you want the recipe sent to you directly every week, all you do is text the word cooks, COOKS, the word cooks, to 97999. If you text that, that'll automatically sign up and you'll get my recipes every week. So this is what I'm going to do this week. I'm going to do my cousin's shrimp dip because it's super easy and super delicious. I'm going to do a tortellini skewer appetizer where I take, you've seen those bags of chicken or, you know, different flavors of tortellinis. They're in usually in the dairy case. I got some spinach tortellini. I'm going to cook it according to package directions and set it aside. Let it cool. And then I'm going to assemble it on some wooden toothpicks, kind of large, you know, like cocktail size toothpicks. I'm going to put a piece of the tortellini. I'm going to put a cherry tomato. I'm going to put a mozzarella ball. And then on top of that, I'm going to sprinkle, I will have mixed in a separate bowl a little bit of pesto, a little bit of olive oil, a little bit of red wine vinegar. And that then just gets sprinkled on the platter of skewers that you're going to make with the tortellini, with the cherry tomato, and a mozzarella ball. That's all there is to it. Couldn't be any easier. You want to sprinkle a little fresh parsley on it. That's not a bad idea. And, you know, if you're serving it for a holiday party, dice up a red bell pepper, really, really small pieces, and alternate a little parsley, a little diced red bell pepper. It's nice and red and green. Looks super festive. Really nice. I'm also going to make some feta cheese puffed pastry. I'm going to take a sheet of puffed pastry, lay it out on the counter. I'm going to cut them into strips and then put a spoonful of feta cheese. Well, first of all, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the feta cheese, about 8 ounces. I'm going to mix it, crumble it. Don't buy crumbled feta cheese that's already crumbled. It's loaded with fillers and things like that. Buy it whole in blocks and crumble it yourself. I'm going to put that with some very finely chopped green onions and a little bit of dill. I'm going to mix the feta cheese with the green onions and the dill really nice until it's almost a paste. So then I'm going to take a spoonful of that mixture, the feta mixture, put it on one of the puff pastry sheets and fold it into a triangle, cut it. Fold it into a triangle, cut it. Fold it into a triangle and cut it. And then it goes into the oven, 375-degree oven, for about 20 minutes. I probably will put an egg yolk wash over the top so it gets a nice, beautiful golden brown topping. Maybe some a little bit of salt on top. And again, the parsley and the diced red pepper just to make it look a little more festive. But so delicious. Like it's a very light feta cheese triangle, basically. 312-981-7200. Let's see what you have. 847, Dean said, never buy crumbled feta cheese. Buy block feta cheese and crumble it with your fingers. Otherwise, all you're getting is fill and plastic. I don't know about plastic, but you do get, they put fillers in there so it doesn't clump. So, you know, you don't need any of that. Just get the feta cheese and bust it up with a fork or, you know, my favorite kitchen utensils, of course, are my clean fingers. So I do that all the time. Let me see. Oh, I wanted to talk about feta cheese. Here's a suggestion from 708. I put goat cheese in phyllo cups. They sell those in the freezer section. I put goat cheese in phyllo cups, bake it at a 350 degrees until the cheese starts to melt. It doesn't take long, believe me. I would say like 5 minutes. And then top it with fig jam. Oh my gosh, that sounds good. That sounds amazing. You could do that same feta mixture that I was talking about with the onions and the dill and put it in the phyllo cups. That's delicious. But I love this goat cheese with the fig jam. That's a fantastic idea. So, we'll post these. And again, I'm going to be doing holiday appetizers on my TV cooking segment this coming Wednesday on WGN TV Morning News about 9:35 in the morning.